You're listening to an LA Kings podcast. For more episodes of this and every other Kings program, visit lakings.com/podcast.
Welcome back to the Rain Check here over the summer. Jared Schaffrin and Josh Schaefer sitting down with two of the goaltending coaches in the LA Kings organization, Matt Miller and Adam Brown. It is exciting to have them here. This is all part of development camp, which is going on this week. We're recording here at Toyota Sports Performance Center. And first of all, guys, before we get into it, how are you guys doing? What's this week been like? Obviously, one of the more busy weeks of the summer.
Yeah, it's definitely been busy getting the guys in here. A little less busy because we weren't able to pick a goaltender, so we don't have a new face to work with. But we do have a goalie that we haven't worked with before here, so there's some newness with him. But for the most part, it's not as busy as it could be working with three guys that we've worked with before.
I think it's always exciting this time of year. Everybody's kind of coming back to town. It's the first time in a while you get to see everybody, and a lot of excitement from the players coming in, so it's an exciting time for sure.
Matt, for you, this is not new. No, this is kind of the same song and dance. You're kind of cemented in your role, and as you said, there's a lot of familiarity in the position. For Adam, he was here last year, but kind of scrambling to get going a little bit. This is now his second go around. So now that we'll start with you. Just you've been here for a few years. You're more comfortable in the role that you have. How are you settling in? Are you trying to do anything different for this season that maybe you guys haven't done in the past, or is there anything new that you guys are looking to work into the system?
As far as like goaltending skills and work like that, I think I'll touch on the fact I don't think Brownie's had to scramble at all. Brownie's been seamless. The transition that he's made from Kelowna to here, the roles that he's been asked to do as far as scouting and development and how flexible he's been with his scheduling and the job that he's done with our young goaltenders has been absolutely seamless. So, and that's just transitioned right into development camp here. His ability to work with these young guys and start to build the foundation for what it is to be an LA Kings goaltender has been absolutely incredible. So we've been really fortunate to have Adam be here this year. In years I've done it by myself, or I've been assisted by Bill, but to have Brownie here, I think the last 2 years, was it? Yeah, the last 2 years has been simply incredible. So to have a second set of eyes, to have maybe a different voice, to have a different perspective on the position is definitely, I think, an area where we're growing and improving as a goaltending department. So to add Adam, I think, has been a huge benefit, not only for Bill and I, but for our goalies as well.
That said, you are coming into a new year, yep. So is there anything that that you guys maybe saw last year that you're bringing into this season, or anything new that you're trying to focus on with some of these younger goalies?
Just laying the foundation, getting their stance where we want it to be, and then I think that stance relates to movement and awareness and a couple other little situational things that we're touching on. But right now, if we can get them to set themselves up in the stance that we think is beneficial for them, get them to hold that stance through movement and through some situations, I think we're in a really good spot. And then obviously adding some of the finer points of the game that's evolving as far as plays moving east-west, a lot of lateral work. Honestly, some of the things that we're working on with Jonathan and Cal as well, just keeping plays in front of them and not getting themselves into some unfavorable positions.
And then, Matt said he felt like it was a seamless transition. Adam, did you feel the same way? Was it a little bit different for you to get up to speed on things the last couple of years?
I've had the benefit of learning a lot over the last year and a half or so. Being able to join the department and having Matt and Bill to guide me along has made things very easy from that standpoint. And I think especially coming into this camp, the amount of detail that this department uses, and Matt's very organized. He's very ahead of schedule, so we've been planning for this for a few months already, so we had everything prepared coming into camp. So then when we got here, we were able to just lay it out for the goaltenders and go right into camp.
When you guys, going back to what Matt said a couple minutes ago about not selecting a goalie in the draft, so you don't really have that fresh face that comes out here for development camp, what are maybe some of the positives with that, where you have some more familiar players that are kind of out with you guys here at development camp, guys that have been around camp or the organization the last couple of years?
Well, I think the thing that's nice for us is we have familiarity, and then we have real data to work off of, some game stuff where we're able to work with these guys for a bit, go watch them apply it in a game. And then I think the thing that's nice here is we've broken things down right down to the foundation, to the bare studs, and really gone through each one of the things that we want to work with them on. And the one thing that's nice is our ability to sit with these guys and have time to actually check for understanding and see if what we know is what they're starting to understand and what they're starting to see. So really just going back and maintaining that foundation. And then that leads to some, you know, we've talked about those situations, some higher level conversations, is how they want to play certain situations, how they kind of branch off from that foundation and kind of develop their own game.
For Adam, you do a lot of traveling during the season. There was a lot of goaltenders from a Rain perspective that were in and out as far as, you know, guys who were getting called up from the ECHL. They got to make a couple appearances when maybe they didn't know it was going to happen. Kind of things changed quickly. What have you seen from some of those guys that were developing? A guy like John Lethem, and I know he is no longer with the organization, but he got a couple chances to step in and play. Jacob Ingham got a couple chances to step in and play. What's it been like for you to kind of see those guys and then have them get a chance to step in at the American League level?
Yeah, it's been really cool to see the progression from those guys. I think that's one of the most exciting parts of my job is, you know, being able to go in and work with them and apply some of these things that as a department we've established as being foundation for them and allowing them to progress their game. And then introducing those things, maybe refining some of those details, seeing them take them into their practices, into their games in the ECHL, and then the amount of preparation that they have and the work that they put in, being able to pay off when they do get an opportunity like that, has been very cool to see. And then with them coming up here and Matt and the communication that we have, it just adds to that seamless transition where we have common language, we have common terms that we use where they can step into the AHL and feel very comfortable really quickly.
I guess this is kind of something that the whole organization kind of dealt with last year, whether it was injuries or, you know, COVID being around, but so much movement between the Kings and the Rain. Was it odd for you guys to work with so many goaltenders kind of just in one season? I know obviously with the Kings you had Quick and Peterson, and then Sparks had a couple of opportunities, but with the Rain, from that perspective, working with so many guys all in one season?
I don't think so. I think the strength of our department is, and my role previously and then Brian's role now, is your ability to travel out and work with a number of different goaltenders. And I think that really forces you to be flexible and find ways to create relationships and common ground with the goaltender first, and then use that as a bridge or doorway into talking about goaltending. And I think that's something that we've been able to do, and Bill's allowed us to do going up to being on the ice at some different points with Cal and with Quickie. So, you know, you get pretty comfortable working with different goalies and on short notice. And then also the communication that we have and the details and the structure that we try to give each one of these goaltenders, we rehearse that from the ECHL all the way up to the NHL. So to be able to step onto the ice with those guys and have that terminology and that relationship, I think it makes it pretty easy for us to work with any goalie that shows up.
And then I think just building off that, and another benefit that we get as a coach is getting a lot of different perspectives, talking about different situations with all these different goaltenders, and maybe somebody brings up a point that they see something a little bit differently than us, and we make adjustments here and there. And then now it's a talking point for me, Matt, and Bill to go back and look at and say, okay, well, maybe this situation is a little bit different or a little bit more complex depending what's happening, and it can allow us to grow as coaches as well, getting all those different perspectives.
Matt, we talked about it throughout the season, but you know, now that the season ended, you've had a little time to decompress. Now you're looking at next season, and Matt Vallalta is back with the organization. He's got his contract. Josh and I got to see, obviously, a ton of him on the ice, but Josh was here last year. I wasn't, and everyone keeps telling me about how much he's progressed, how much he's improved, and we can see it just off the ice maturity-wise. I mean, when you put a bow on what Matt Vallalta did from the beginning of last season to now this season, I mean, how what's it like for you to see the progress that he's made and maybe, you know, now that he's maybe looking forward to taking that next step?
Yeah. First and foremost, Matt's the one that's put in the work, and his care for his own game is extremely high. And as he's learned to be around guys like Jack Campbell first and Cal Peterson and Jonathan Quick, those guys really lead the way in terms of how hard you work and how detailed you need to be. And then on top of that, adding a guy like Brownie and Bill and myself, which Brownie alluded to earlier, we can collaborate and talk about things that we see. I see Matt every day. Maybe Bill steps onto the ice or Brownie steps onto the ice or watches video when he's on the road and they catch one or two things that, you know, might be slipping in Matt's game. So our ability to communicate amongst ourselves and really give Matt one or two things to work on that are the solution or the root cause for why things might be slipping away or why things are going well. And we keep hammering on that to make sure it's part of his game every single night. I think that's the strength of our department. And you see that Matt benefits from that. You have three guys that care greatly about him. And when we bring him the information, he puts in the work, and then he's able to see the fruits of that hard work when he steps on the ice during a game.
I think anybody that's ever had the opportunity to speak with Matt as well understands the quality of person that he is and can see how that translates to his game and his on-ice play.
When it comes to a guy like David Hranek, I mean, we talked a little bit about him before we even started recording today and about how he's just a player that kind of like lights up when you walk in and say hello to him. What was it like with him joining kind of towards the tail end of the season after missing so much time due to an illness after the end of his college season, how it kind of abruptly ended? What was that transition like for him and for you guys introducing him to, I guess, professional hockey?
So he had just come off of pneumonia, I believe it was, and he was on the bench when they lost in the national tournament. So he came to us after that, and I won't lie, he was rough. Like, he was gas after four or five reps. So he was one of three goalies that were on the ice. So that transition was a bit smoother, but we had a plan in place as a department, and Brownie and I were able to sit down and go through video, not only of him, but also other goalies that were doing a lot of things that we wanted to see him do as he came into the AHL. And to his credit, he was a student of what we were trying to encourage him to do, and he picked some of those things up rather quickly. And I think that's something that we weren't able to do, is get on the ice with David, and something that I hadn't realized, because I hadn't been on the ice with him, was how quickly he was able to learn and how much he paid attention when you were coaching. I think there's some guys that might take him a month or a week to learn something, where David is just little reminders, and somehow he makes those adjustments fairly quick as you progress from NCAA into the AHL and then playing a hockey game and finding success in the American Hockey League in a pretty short order.
His level of buy-in from the start was through the roof. You know, he was taking everything that he was given, and he was working on applying it and eager and hungry to learn from really the first time we talked to him. But once he got here, especially when we were able to get on the ice with him, it was pretty cool to see.
Which is surprising, because when you talk to him, he's really hard to talk to, and he's not an easy person to
well, I was going to say, around, so. If you're, you know, wondering about more about David Hranek, we had him on our last episode. So definitely great to hear from him. And, you know, he's here this week at development camp, and it sounds like he's having a great off season.
Yeah. And that was a fun episode that we had with him the last time out. When you have a couple of different players or a couple of different goalies in the organization that have played elsewhere and then will come and work out and train with you guys, whether it's, you know, Matt Vallalta, who came from, you know, the junior ranks and then has played in the AHL, Hranek, who's logged a ton of games in the NCAA and is even kind of on that older side, and then you have some guys that have played in Europe. What are some of the differences you see between those guys when they come back for either development camp or just come back to LA to train?
I think it depends on the level. If guys haven't played pro hockey, and it doesn't matter where it is, I think there's a big jump. And that's something that we're still kind of working with Matt through, is how to transition from being a guy that plays junior hockey into a full-time professional athlete. And I think that's 24 hours a day. That's something that's on and off ice. And I think that's the first hurdle. And then in the goaltending position, it's how do you start to work in practice? How do you start to see some of the things that we're talking about in practice? Then how does that transition into a game? And then finally, how do you consistently do that in games? So I think for a guy like Matt, that's, he's kind of at that last hurdle of doing things consistently in a game and being predictable in what we know he's gonna do on the ice. For some of the European guys, like we even talked with Toby, who's and Chichka, who's from Berlin in the DEL, he talked about how we were doing a pass out drill today and how the ice surface was different and how pucks get to the middle of the ice quicker. So I think there's a lot of different things, and I guess it's a roundabout way of saying it depends on the individual, their history, how long they've played, who they've been coached by. And I think it starts with just conversation on what they think they are as a player, what they've liked in different coaches they've worked with, what they don't like in different coaches they've worked with, and you know, what they believe in their game. And then obviously it's our job to then come alongside them and say, hey, these are some things that we think we can give to you that you can start to work on in your game that are going to make you even better. So hopefully those guys then take that and use those things throughout the summer and come back, 1% better, and then we can continue to build on it.
I guess on that note, I mean, you just mentioned Toby and Chichka, and then he coming from Ice Baron Berlin, and then Luke Pavicic from UMass. When you have these camp invites that are also kind of mixed in with players that have been in the organization a little while, what do you look for? What are your goals going into development camp with, you know, the invitees specifically?
Well, an invitee, I think Brownie's done more work in terms of with the scouting side of it. I think that's where you start to develop the relationship with those guys and who you invite and what you identify. And I can speak a little bit about like what we look for in our goaltender, obviously, like hockey sense and skating and, you know, the ability to obviously stop the puck and keep it out of the net. But that's probably an easy one. But there's certain skills and attributes that you look for that you can hopefully build on. And I would say just from my perspective before Brownie takes over, just trying to get a feel for the player and develop a little bit of a relationship and see if they can be a fit.
Yeah, I think the biggest thing that we look for coming into camp is a willingness to learn. Development camp week is about just that. It's about developing your game. It's about trying new things. It's about being open-minded. So everybody has their way of playing, and we're not looking to change the way that anybody plays. But we feel that we have some foundational things that everybody can apply to their game in order to increase what they do well, and to be able to use their tools more effectively. So that willingness to learn, the work ethic, and just trying to establish a relationship with them. I think establishing the trust is the easiest way to kind of get to know somebody the best, is once they trust that you know what you're doing and you're there to help them, and you trust that they're going to listen to you and ask questions when needed and work hard when they're on the ice. That's when you can have a relationship where it starts building and going the right direction.
Well, you guys just talked about maybe what we look for in a goaltender. Kings made us a move this week, bringing in Phoenix Copley as a free agent. For Kings fans, maybe potentially Rain fans, what attributes does Phoenix bring? What do you guys know about him, and what is, you know, he's a veteran. He's been around pro hockey for a while. It seems like a guy who's going to add a lot of professionalism to the group.
Yeah, so I guess we haven't had direct contact with him as far as getting to know him as a person. We've only seen what he can do as a player. But everyone that we've talked to, first and foremost, is an elite character, unbelievable person, followed up by work ethic and, you know, almost a guy that you have to kind of rein back a little bit, and a guy that's going to work until he physically can't work anymore. So we've got a stallion that we're going to have to kind of rein in a little bit and give some guidance, which is great, because you want a guy that's going to show up and work hard and apply what you're teaching him. So that's fun. And then obviously just a guy that he's played a lot of games in the AHL, had probably one of his best seasons last year with Hershey. And a guy that's definitely climbing up and finding the ceiling of his potential for sure.
Well, we want to get into some off-ice things as you guys here enjoy your summer. Matt, you're from California. You're able to kind of be near home when you get some downtime. And Brownie, you're not. So what do you guys do in the off-season? What are some of the things you've been up to when you get a little bit of downtime? And what do you enjoy about when you're in town?
Well, for me, I try and get on the golf course as much as possible. Unfortunately, in Kelowna, we've had a lot of rain so far this year, so my golf swing's suffering a little bit, but I'm looking to get that in check in the next month or so here. And then I was fortunate enough to travel overseas a little bit. I was over in Italy for 2 weeks, so that took up quite a bit of my time and took a toll on my body fat percentage as well with all the pizza and pasta over there. So summer for me is just, it's a lot about relaxing, trying to decompress a little bit, and then preparation for the next year. We had a lot of stuff behind the scenes for the draft and for development camp leading up to this. So I'm just looking at depth and what our guys need and trying to be as prepared as possible for next season.
Where'd you go in Italy?
So I was a few different places. I was in Rome for a few days, and then we went to the coast a little bit, to a small town, small little beach town there, and just relaxed, got away from most of the tourists that seem to be springing up everywhere with all these flights that are getting canceled and everybody traveling the world right now. And then we went to Florence for 2 days before we came back, which was quite the experience. It's their dinner's a little bit late for me over there, but it was a good time.
I've just taken advantage of being literally with my family. So my mom, my dad, my sister, my wife, I've spent a lot of time with them. I love learning, so I've read probably two or three different books. And then something that Jeremy Clark's kind of Clarky's got me into is jiu-jitsu. So I've been doing a lot of that lately, which has been physically and mentally taxing, but it's interesting the some of the parallels that you can draw when you challenge yourself and it's something new, and you see the goalies here challenging themselves and going through something new. So you can kind of identify with them and figure out different ways to continue to coach them through some of those sticking points. I'm really excited about going. My wife's from Wisconsin, so I'm going to be headed out to Wisconsin to a cabin with her family and spend a lot of time at a boat fishing and being outdoors, which I really enjoy doing. So that's the three main things I've been doing here.
Either of you guys beach people, though?
Yeah, I like going to the beach. You know, I like going walking around there. I'd like to get out on the surfboard at some point, but most of our downtime spent in town is seeing a lot of the local landmarks. You know, Millsy has done a great job during our off time showing me around. We've seen all the important sites. We've been to Richmond's. We've gone to Rock and Brew. We've been to El Segundo Bruco.
There you go.
So I think we've hit all the local landmarks there in our off time. But no, Matt's done a great job. He's always keeping me entertained. He's having me over. He's smoking some meat on the grill and putting me through some good dinners there. So we have a good time when we do have a little bit of time away from the rink here.
Have you done the touristy stuff, the LA touristy stuff?
Well, so I was fortunate enough to live in Southern California for 5 years when I was younger. So I've seen most of the main tourist things, but I went to Redondo and I went down to Manhattan and I saw, you know, went to the pier and had some nice dinners at some of those restaurants down there. So is there anything I'm missing? Maybe I need a better host.
Oh,
well, it sounds like you got El Segundo.
I'm not a big downtown LA like landmark guy. If I'll show you an El Segundo, I think El Segundo's got plenty to keep you entertained and occupied. And if not, you can go down to Manhattan Beach, and you can get the beach vibes off of that. Check that off the list. But I'm not a huge city guy, so I like to get down. I like to get down to the beach, and if I get down to the beach, you know, a couple times a week, get on the pier. I don't surf as much anymore. I think I might try to get back into paddleboarding, which seems a little easier than straight surfing like it did when I was in high school. A little easier on the body, but it's nice to get out there and hear the waves and watch other guys surf and catch waves and just do something different.
Well, the reason I brought it up is because we've been all year throughout the season asking guys when they go to the beach, do they sit on a chair or do they just bring a towel and sit on a towel? And so I was interested because you guys have a couple different backgrounds.
Ronnie looks like he's pretty adamant about answering.
He's into it.
This isn't a discussion. You bring a chair and you sit on the chair. There's nothing more uncomfortable than trying. If you're laying on the sand and you're only laying, but as soon as you try and sit on the sand, I can't think of anything more uncomfortable.
What if your chair reclines like all the way down? You're laying on the chair.
Yeah, like a beach chair.
Yeah, there you go. I'm in favor of a beach chair.
Well, because it, you know.
I'm so mad.
We have mad. Josh is more of a towel guy.
No. Well, that's the thing. So I've lived here my whole life.
I'm a chair guy. So I'm just going to say.
Do you not have a bed either?
Well, no.
Why don't you just lay on the floor?
No, no. So I've lived here my whole life, and not one time have I brought a chair to the beach. And I hate sand. I don't know.
What?
Well, you got the wrong kind of chair. You got to get the chair with the backpack, and it has a pouch in it, and you put all your supplies in there, and then you got everything all in one.
Place for your drink. You got place for your sunscreen.
Yeah, I mean,
what do you do with the towel when you're done? Like, that towel is
sandy and dirty. What are you going to dry yourself off with it? Like...
The one thing is, I agree.
So that's the thing. But as a kid growing up in LA and going to the beach, and all your friends have the towels, I would never have thought, you know what? I'm bringing a chair. So that's why I never went that way. Okay. So
you're too cool for the chairs. What's happening?
I think next time I go to the beach, I'm bringing a chair.
Absolutely. And another thing that I tried was I was able to try the beach tennis.
Okay.
When I was here earlier and Juho was here, I was able to take him out there. And I won't spoil it. You can ask him how it went. He might not be too happy to tell you, but we had a good time with that. That was a new experience for me. I enjoyed it.
The one thing I will say that we haven't talked about that is a big difference for me now that I'm here with the beach is that, you know, I spent my last 5 years in Charleston, which – you have a lot more activities in the water that you can do casually. The water here is freezing. So maybe the thing is with Josh, he never was in the water, so he didn't need to use his towel to dry himself off. Whereas if you were in the water more, then that's what you need it for.
Well, see, I just don't like sand. I'm just not a sand guy.
So really, it sounds like you're just not a beach guy.
I enjoy the beach. You're not convincing us
with the towel.
Why would you not sit on the chair up and away from the sand?
Well, next time I go to the beach, I need to get a new beach chair, though. I got to get a new one.
Yeah, you got a lot of work to do.
I know. I mean, I'm really
get you away from the sand.
I'm just letting all of my fellow Angelinos down here.
I'm inserting myself into this conversation. This is Jesse going. Growing up in Southern California, like I grew up in Long Beach. Mm-hmm. If I went to the beach, it wasn't a day trip. It was like, hey, do you want to ride your bike down to the beach? Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure, let's go. Or like, hey, toss your, you know, like, you want to go? Yeah, hop in the car. And we would go. And you're there for like, I don't know, 20 minutes, half an hour. Like, you go because it's there. Mm-hmm. You throw a towel around your butt. You sit in your car so that your car seats don't get sand on them. And then, yeah, that towel is cooked. You have a beach towel and you have like house towels. Mm-hmm. That's why no chair.
No, but you guys are right.
You guys are 100% right.
I agree with you.
But so I grew up in El Segundo, so that's like a 5-minute, 10-minute drive. Like if you want to walk, like Adam said, you have chairs that turn into a backpack. You throw your stuff into the chair that's got like a little Velcro pouch. You walk down, right down Grand. You're at El Segundo Beach. You hang out for as long or as little as you want. You throw everything back in the chair backpack and you walk right back up. Maybe I had a special chair that no one else had, but that's what I had.
Well, and I'm going to agree with you. When I was a kid, I used to do the same thing. I'd go to the beach, I'd bring my towel, I'd throw it down. I also used to microwave all my meals, but I'm an adult now and I have adult responsibilities, and I bring a chair with me because I don't like being uncomfortable in the sand, the same way that I cook my own meals on a stove.
You guys are 100% right. We're wrong.
Well, exactly. Like, that's why I'm mad about it. So I'm from the Valley. So when you're up in the San Fernando Valley, you have two kind of ways you can go to the beach. You can either come back down the coast and hit like the Santa Monica area or wherever you have the bigger beaches where there's more sand, like the volleyball courts and things like that. Yeah. But if you go the other way and either go straight out or a little bit further north, you have the smaller beaches. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's kind of a mix of those things where you'd hop in the car with your friends, go to the beach for a couple hours or something like that, but it's not an all-day thing. So then you'll just find a beach that's smaller where there's nobody around and you'll kind of just walk around. So that I wouldn't bring a chair. So that's why I kind of went down the towel route, but now I'm upset and will never bring a towel to the beach again.
I think it's just going to transformation that you have to go through.
Yeah.
I think you're at that point where I feel like I'm just getting old because I used to go in the water and body surf and just get absolutely destroyed. That doesn't sound like any fun to me anymore.
No.
Going in the water for 4 seconds to cool off and then I'm all salty. That's also not that much fun anymore. So
I don't want sand coming and water coming out of my ears for the next 2 weeks because I got rolled by a wave when I was surfing.
Well, now that we've flushed that out.
Yeah. That's the most in-depth we've ever conversation we've had about that.
Jesse has talked about maybe having us transition away from this as we move forward, but we'll see. I don't know. This may have invigorated the conversation. But
I just think it's the guests. You got to have the right guests on right now. You got some pretty good guests.
Yeah, we got great guests. And we also have, as Matt just, you know, Adam alluded to it, but, you know, I wanted to have Matt comment. Also, one of the big things that you're into is barbecue. And so I want you to tell us what your favorite meat is to have. But then I want to have Brownie say what his favorite thing that he's tried that you've made. So,
well, things that you do, I don't really, I guess I could have put barbecue in there, but barbecue has like become just part of my life and something that I
right.
just
it's not necessarily do. Maybe just an so off season thing. It's always,
like, oh, it's a hobby. I'm looking forward to it. I think the one thing that I like that I don't think I've been able to make consistently is doing brisket, just because it's hard to buy at Costco at times. I think the majority of the things that I've been able to cook for the guys that have come over, like tri-tip, pulled pork, chicken, a lot of things like that are a little easier to buy. So I don't know. I'm interested to see what Brownie would say. I think one of the things that I enjoy cooking and is I think tastes great is brisket, but I also like making homemade barbecue sauce. So for me, those would be the two things that I really enjoy, just because they're a little more labor intensive. So when you get the brisket, you have to trim it down. You have to cut it. I took a barbecue class. The guy's name is Dustin Bartz, Bartz Barbecue. It's Lawndale, basically, for a day, 2 days actually. One day shows you how to prep and cook a brisket. The next day you do a couple different variations of ribs. But I really love doing the brisket because I think it's a little more time intensive. And I think when you're done, you have a better feeling of satisfaction, and it actually feeds more people than you'd think. So I really enjoy doing brisket.
We should have recorded after lunch. It was a mistake to do before.
Well, to answer your question, all of Matt's meat is delicious. Matt's meat is fantastic. It's all very good. I'm going to go outside the box a little bit. He made some salmon the one day, and wow, he had a mandarin orange glaze that he made for it, and that was hard to beat.
I was not expecting that.
And something that I think helped Matt and I bond a little bit when we first started working together was we both have a love for barbecue. We both have the Traeger that we cook on. So we immediately started talking about different ways to cook our meat and what we do with our meat in our spare time. So it just worked out really well.
Photos back and forth. Like, hey, I just did a brisket here, or I just did this the other day. So it was a lot of text going back and forth about the different meats we're cooking. So it's pretty funny.
I've asked you, Matt, before. I don't think Brownie, I've asked you, but any recommendations for if someone is in this area and they want to get some barbecue, do you have anything locally that, and I know you usually just say, well, just I'm going to do my own. So maybe you're not spending much time elsewhere, but is there anywhere else you want to recommend?
The closest one that I know of is Brit's Barbecue in El Segundo. But there's a couple different local ones. I think there's some really good pop-up ones too, but like Heritage Barbecue is really good. It's so tough because I think it's one of those things that people love different barbecue places because they either love the way that the meat is smoked or the sauces that come with it. So I think that's a tough thing for me to tell someone, hey, I can tell you what I like, but that doesn't necessarily mean that's going to be what you like. So I think that's the fun part about barbecue for me is the experimenting of, hey, I like stuff that was really spicy and hot for a while, and now I like stuff that's a little sweeter, that has a little more like smoky, dense flavor to it. So I think each person needs to go on their own journey and figure out what barbecue they love. And I think for me, and I've learned this the hard way, I used to over-season and over-sauce everything. And I think I love letting the smoke take care of the meat and then making the sauces on the side, whether it's sweet, whether it's heat, whether it's, you know, like a Carolina, like mustard, whatever it is, I think those sauces on the side are where it's at.
Once you get into the smoking of meat, it's a level that you didn't think that you'd get into. It's like wine connoisseurs. People have so many opinions and they're so adamant about this is the best way. This is the best kind of meat. This is how you season it. You have to cook it this way. And I think that, like Matt said, the biggest thing is just finding what you like. And the most fun part is experimenting with different ways of doing it and, you know, different types of wood and different types of seasoning and sauces. And I was shocked at how deep you could get into the meat cooking realm.
Deep in the smoke game. We're just, use the word marinate. We've been marinating in it for the last couple of years, just soaking it up and trying to figure out different ways to barbecue. And I mean, it's with social media now, like somebody does something, like I saw something the other day where someone did a brisket and usually you wrap it, but they made a boat and they kept the top of the brisket exposed to get a little more smoke, a little more bark on it. So like people are doing crazy things out there. We're just lucky to be part of the ride and try it ourselves once in a while.
this might be a pretty cliche follow-up question, but then if there's a side that you're picking to go with your barbecue, do you have a preference, or does it depend on what kind of meat you're cooking and how you're cooking it?
I'll let you go.
No, I was just going to say, absolutely. Do you want to go into a specific type of meat, and then we can give our favorite side for that? Or
I'll go with the brisket then.
I would say as a brisket, I will say the staples. I'll just give you the staples that I like. And Brownie can tell you. I like coleslaw a little. I don't like the super like creamy kind of. It's got to be a little vinegary. I like mac and cheese that's done right, and cornbread never is as a bad option. Obviously, you can go baked beans as well. So I think those are the ones that I've spent the most time trying to find a good recipe for. I think give my mom a shout out for she did a mac and cheese, and finding out that you can mix different types of cheese to make the mac and cheese make a huge difference. So that was, I think, the game changer for me, that I was like, I don't know, you just use one cheese. Like, it's mac and cheese. It's not that complicated. Well, then you mix two or three different types of cheese together, and you have this mac and cheese that's, you know, it's not a side anymore. It's like a main dish.
The brisket, for me, you're going jalapeno cornbread, hands down. There's no other option, in my opinion, especially because you don't want to mess around getting too many sides, because then you don't get enough brisket. You got to fill up on the brisket. You got to get a little bit of cornbread to mix it up, and that's all you need for your brisket meal.
Well, that's I agree with all that. The problem I have is I try to do the cornbread, and then also, like Matt says, I'm eating too many sides, which are all great, and then I don't get enough brisket.
Well, if mac and cheese is there, I'm loading half my plate with mac and cheese, and I'm losing out on all the good stuff.
The trap you fall into is when you make it, you're like eating it as you like go along, and then you realize like, well, I had a little bit of everything, and you're like pretty full. And you're like, do you cross that barrier of just like, I'm going to go all in and feel bad for the next 2 days because I just crushed barbecue?
Yeah.
Or do I kind of like spread it out? And I think Brownie's got a little more discipline in the food game than I do. As you can see, we're obviously different heights and weights, but I could probably stand to lose a little bit more weight through the experimentation of the barbecue.
Well, you're also doing jujitsu, so that's a good thing.
Yeah, balances being out. Heavy isn't a bad thing in jujitsu either. That definitely helps.
I am so hungry. Oh my gosh.
Well, we appreciate you guys. I was going to try to bring it back to goaltending, but I think the ship has sailed so far away from goaltending.
I hope you draw a parallel.
We were here to talk about goaltending.
A little parallel with goaltending, a lot like barbecue, is when you're developing a goaltender, it takes a lot longer than you think. And you got to be patient. And if you pull it out of the oven too early, it's going to be overcooked, or probably undercooked, and it's not going to be ready to eat. So sometimes you have to be a little patient and let it do its thing until it hits the right temperature. And then when you hit the right temperature, you trust your tools, and then you're ready to go.
When you're using the smoker, the question is always, what time is it going to be ready? Add about 2 hours, and that's what time you're eating dinner that night.
It always takes longer than you think. We joke because my wife, Amy, and then his girlfriend always go back and forth. You know, we text one another about stuff that they say, and my wife always says, it always takes longer than you think. So I was like, oh, it's going to take this long. And then he has the same thing with Sarah. His girlfriend is like, well, yeah, is it ready yet? We'll add 2 hours. So it's funny that our significant others now kind of understand the barbecue game and the patience it takes.
I always get it's going to be ready at 6 o'clock. Is it really? is the common response there. So it's just like goaltending. When you think they're going to be ready, give them a little bit of time, make sure, and then you'll know for sure when they're ready.
I guess maybe to wrap it up, is that how much of that did you guys learn from when you were playing the position versus, you know, now that you're as a coach developing some of these goaltenders, you know, putting yourself in their shoes, did that help you learn maybe, hey, we can't rush these guys, they need a little bit extra time?
I can say for me, all of that knowledge has come from being a coach, because when I was a player, I thought I was ready the entire time until I got there and found out that I wasn't. But as a coach, I think it's a lot easier to really sit – not easier, but it's a lot more important to sit back and really analyze and make sure that things are being done properly and that things are on track, or realize that there is no set time limit, that it's going to be ready when it's ready. And sometimes there's situations where you know, the preparation that you've done up to that point needs to be enough, but you know that it's still not the finished product.
Well, guys, we appreciate all of your time. I know it's a busy week, and we're excited to see the work that you're continuing to do with all of our goaltenders. And, oh, I have to ask one more question before we leave. We were watching your drills yesterday, and we did get a little bit of a maybe explanation from Chris Height about this, but you guys were
– Hey, thanks for having us on the podcast, guys. I really appreciate it. I think Brown and I have somewhere we've got to go.
No. We saw that – We've never, I mean, and again, I haven't been around hockey maybe that long, but you guys had the goalies laying down on the ice, taking a maybe a different vantage point at the net. And it's hard because we're on a podcast, so people can't see this visually, but we said we were going to ask you, so I have to do that before we let you go. What was, when you have a goalie maybe out of the net and taking a look, is that the way that at least Heider explained it was, you know, trying to understand different angles of maybe where a shooter's coming from? Is that kind of what that was? Because it was – for everyone watching camp was like, what is happening with these goalies laying on the ice right now? It's definitely different.
So, yeah. So, first off, you guys asked Chris Height, which I don't know why you would do that.
Well, he's just standing there next to
him. I'm just kidding, because the joke amongst our staff is like, when I used to have to travel, Chris would come in and help, and he would be the assistant to the goalie coach. So
he did say that. He did say he was the assistant to the goalie.
Like the assistant to the regional manager.
Yeah, that's what he said, yes.
I thought this was going to be a segue for him to try to butt into the goalie development conversation here, but this is a more technical thing, and this is actually something that Brownie is going to be kind of his thing, and he's been really good at explaining, so I'll let him.
Yeah, I'm not going to get into too much goaltending. No. But essentially, we were just showing them where the puck has to go to get in through the net. And it's quite a different perspective based on where the puck's coming from. So when you're down on the ice seeing what the puck sees, there's a different perspective on what space there is for it to go through. Just we were trying to give them some knowledge of, I guess in goaltending you could call it box control. We do it a little bit differently, but it essentially shows the coverage that they need to have in order for the puck to go in the net, based on them moving out of the way and where the puck needs to go around them. So it was just a visual from where the puck is as to where it has to go and then where they have to be in the net in order to keep it out.
Just an elevated teaching tool, and I think it helps when they can lay down on the ice and actually see, like Brownie said, where the puck is and where it can go. I think it's really important for those guys to be able to get out of the net and actually see at times what we're seeing so that they can actually understand what we're talking about when we pull them out of the net or when we talk to them about those different things. Because like we've talked about, we can understand these things, Brownie and I can understand them and have a really great grasp of them. But at the end of the day, the guys that are in the net are the ones that need to understand it and use it quickly to keep a puck out of the net because they're the ones that are playing. So it's just another an unbelievable teaching tool that Brownie's brought.
Well, I'm glad you clarified on their stomach because one of the times that I asked the goaltender to do it, he actually went back behind the puck and laid on his back facing me, essentially looking upside down towards me. And yeah, we won't go there.
Well, it was definitely something that we haven't seen, but, you know, we knew there was a purpose to it. So I'm glad that we got the explanation. And then, you know, if we see it in a practice, we'll be able to clarify, we will not need the assistance of the goaltending coach to help with that.
I mean, he's a good guy if you want the real basic knowledge, but, I mean, you have the two guys here. That.
Exactly.
Wouldn't it be good if there was no purpose, though, and we were just messing with you guys?
I mean,
it sounds like you're more messing with the goalies than us. But.
Yeah, that's true.
Well, anyway, yeah, we appreciate all your guys' time, and I'm glad I remembered to ask our final question. But, no, we wish you the best of luck moving forward, getting ready for the season, and hopefully we'll reconnect with you guys soon.
Thanks for having us. This was awesome.
Yeah, thanks for having us on.